Part 2. Plague Moon. Six. Land of decay. Dead things. Glory of terror. The Astartes spread out through the fog, moving as swiftly as the boggy conditions allowed, and following the source of the Vox signal. Horus led from the front, a living god marching tall through the stinking quagmires and rank swamps of Davin's moon, untroubled by the noxious atmosphere. He disdained the wearing of a helmet, his superhuman physique easily able to withstand the airborne poisons. Four blocks of Astartes marched, phalanx-like, into the mists, with each member of the Mournival leading nearly 200 warriors. Behind them came the soldiers of the Imperial Army, company after company of red-jacketed warriors with gleaming lasguns and silver-tipped lances. Each man was equipped with rebreather apparatus after it was discovered that their mortal constitutions were unable to withstand the moon's toxic atmosphere. Initial landings of armor proved to be disastrous, as tanks sank into the marshland and dropships found themselves caught in the sucking mud. Though the greatest of all the engines of war were those that emerged from the Mechanicum landers, even the Astartes had paused in their advance to watch the descent of the three monstrously huge craft, slowly dropping through the yellow skies in defiance of gravity like great primeval monoliths. The blackened hulks travelled on smoking pillars of fire as their colossal retros fought to slow them down. Even with such fiery deceleration, the ground shook with the hammer blow of their impacts. Geysers of murky water thrown hundreds of meters into the air, along with blinding clouds as the swamps flashed to steam. Massive hatches blew open, and the motion-resistant scaffolding fell away, as the titans of the Legio Mortis stepped from their landing craft and onto the moon's surface. The Dies Irae led the Death's Head and Zesta's Sword. Warlord titans with long, fluttering honor rolls hung from their armored thorax. Each thunderous footstep of the mighty titans sent shockwaves through the swamps for kilometers in all directions, their bastion legs sinking several meters through the marshy ground to the bedrock beneath. Their steps churned huge gouts of mud and water, their appearance that of awesome gods of war come to smite the War Master's enemies beneath their mighty tread. Loken watched the arrival of the titans with a mixture of awe and unease. Awe for the majesty of their colossal appearance, unease for the fact that the War Master felt it necessary to deploy such powerful engines of destruction. The advance was slow going, trudging through clinging mud and stinking brackish water, all the while unable to see much more than a few dozen meters. The thick fog banks deadened sound in such a way that something close by might be inaudible, while Loken could clearly hear the splash of warriors from Luke Sedere's men far to his right. Of course, he couldn't see them through the yellow mist, so each company kept in regular vox contact to try and ensure they weren't separating. Loken wasn't sure it was helping, though. Strange groans and hisses, like the expelled breath of a corpse, bubbled from the ground, and blurred shadow forms moved in the mist. Each time he raised his bolter to take aim in readiness, the mist would part, and an armored figure in the green of the Sons of Horus or the steel gray of the Word-Bearers would be revealed. Erebus had led his warriors to Davin's moon in support of the War Master, and Horus had welcomed their presence. The mist gathered in thickness with unsettling speed, slowly swallowing them up until all Loken could see were warriors from his own company. They passed through a dark forest of leafless dead trees, the bark glistening and wet-looking. Loken paused to examine one, pressing his gauntlet against the tree's surface and grimacing as its bark sloughed off in wet chunks. Writhing maggots and burrowing creatures curled and wriggled within the rotten sapwood.
"These trees," he said.
"What about them?" asked Vipers.
"I thought they were dead, but they're not."
"No?"
"They're diseased. Rotten with it."
Vipers shrugged and carried onwards, and once again Loken was struck by the certainty that something terrible had happened here. And looking at the diseased heartwood of the tree, he wasn't sure that it was over. He wiped his stained gauntlet on his leg armor and set off after Vipers. The eerily silent march continued through the fog, and, assisted by the servo muscles of their armor, the Astartes quickly began to outpace the soldiers of the Imperial Army, who were finding the going much more difficult.
"Morneval," said Loken over the intersuit link, "we need to slow our advance. We're leaving too big a gap between ourselves and the army detachments."
"Then they need to pick up the pace," returned Abaddon. "We don't have time to wait for lesser men. We're almost at the source of the Vox."
"Lesser men," said Aximand. "Be careful, Ezekiel. You're starting to sound a little like Eidolon now."
"Eidolon? That fool would have come down here on his own to gain glory," snarled Abaddon. "I'll not be compared to him."
"My apologies, Ezekiel. You're obviously nothing like him,"
deadpanned Aximand. Loken listened with amusement to his fellow Morneval's bantering, which, together with the quiet of Davin's moon, began to reassure him that his concerns over their deployment here might be unfounded. He lifted his armored boot from the swamp and took another step forward, this time feeling something crack under his step. Glancing down, he saw something round and greenish-white bob upwards in the water. Even without turning it over, he could see it was a skull. The paleness of bone wreathed in necrotic strands of rotted flesh and muscle. A pair of shoulders rose from the depths behind it, the spinal column exposed beneath a layer of bloated green flesh. Loken's lip curled in disgust as the decomposed corpse rolled onto its back, its sightless eye sockets filled with mud and weeds. Even as he saw the rotted cadaver, more bobbed to the surface, no doubt disturbed from their resting places on the bottom of the swamps by the footfalls of the Titans. He called a halt and opened the link to his fellow commanders once again, as yet more bodies, hundreds now, floated to the surface of the swamp. Grey and lifeless meat still clung to their bones, and the impacts of the Titans' footfalls gave their dead limbs a horrid animation.
"This is Loken," he said. "I've found some bodies."
"Are they Tembers, men?" asked Horus.
"I can't tell, sir," answered Loken. "They're too badly decomposed. It's hard to tell. I'm checking now."
He slung his bolter and leaned forwards, gripping the nearest corpse and lifting it from the water. Its bloated, rancid flesh was alive with wriggling motion, burrowing carrion insects and larvae nesting within it. Sure enough, mouldering scraps of a uniform hung from it, and Loken wiped a smear of mud from its shoulder. Barely legible beneath the scum and filth of the swamps, he found a sewn patch bearing the number 63 emblazoned over the outline of a snarling wolf's head.
"Yes, 63rd Expedition," confirmed Loken. "They're Tembers. But I..."
Loken never finished the sentence, as the bloated body suddenly reached up and fastened its bony fingers around his neck, its eyes filled with lambent green fire.
"Loken," said Horus, as the link was suddenly cut off. "Loken?"
"Something amiss?"
asked Torgadon.
"I don't know yet, Taric," answered the War Master.
Suddenly the hard bangs of bolter fire and the whoosh of flame units could be heard from all around them.
"Second company," shouted Torgadon. "Stand to! Weapons free!"
"Where's it coming from?" bellowed Horus.
"Can't say," replied Torgadon. "The mist playing merry hell with the acoustics." "Find out," ordered the War Master.
Torgadon nodded, demanding contact reports from all companies. Garbled shouts of impossible things came over the link, along with the louder bark of heavy bolter fire. Gunfire sounded to his left, and he spun to face it, his bolter raised before him. He could see nothing but the staccato flashes of weapon fire and the occasional blue streak of a plasma shot. Even the external senses of his armor were unable to penetrate the creeping mist.
"Sir, I think we—"
Without warning, the swamp exploded as something vast and bloated erupted from the water before him. Its gangrenous, rotten flesh barreled into him, its bulk sufficient to knock him onto his back and into the swamp. Before he went under the dark water, Torgadden had the fleeting impression of a yawning mouth filled with hundreds of fangs, and a glaucous cyclopean eye beneath a horn of yellowed bone.
"I don't know. The command net just went crazy,"
said Moderati Primus Arukan, in response to Princeps Turnit's question. The external surveyors had suddenly and shockingly filled with returns that hadn't been there a second ago, and his princeps had demanded to know what was going on.
"Well, find out, damn you," ordered Turnit. "The Warmaster's out there."
"Main guns spooled up and ready to fire," reported Moderati Primus Titus Cassar.
"We need a damn target first. I'm not about to fire into that mess without knowing what I'm shooting at," said Turnit. "If it was army, I'd risk it, but not Astartes."
The bridge of the Dies Irae was bathed in a red light, its three command officers seated upon their control seats on a raised dais before the green glow of the tactical plot. Wired into the very essence of the Titan, they could feel its every motion as though it were their own. Despite the mighty war machine beneath him, Jonah Arukan suddenly felt powerless as this unknown enemy arose to engulf the Sons of Horus. Expecting armored opposition and an enemy they could see, they had been little more than a focus for the Imperial forces to rally around so far. For all the Titans' overwhelming superiority and firepower, there was little they could do to aid their fellows.
"Getting something," reported Cassar. "Incoming signal."
"What is it? I need better information than that, damn you," shouted Turnit.
"Aerial contact. Signals firming up. Fast moving and heading towards us."
"Is it a Stormbird?"
"No, sir. All Stormbirds are accounted for in the deployment zone, and I'm not picking up any military transponder signals."
Turnit nodded.
"Then it's hostile. Do you have a solution, Arukan?"
"Running it now, Princeps." "Range 600 meters and closing," said Cassar. "God Emperor, protect us. It's coming right for us."
"Arukan, that's too damn close. Shoot it down."
"Working on it, sir."
"Work faster."
The dense mists made looking through the frontal windshield pointless. Nevertheless, there was an irresistible fascination in looking out at an alien world. Not that there was much, or indeed anything, to see. Thus, Petronella's first impressions upon breaching the upper atmosphere were of disappointment, having expected exotic vistas of unimaginable alien strangeness. Instead, they had been buffeted by violent storm winds and could see nothing but the yellow skies and banks of fog that seemed to be gathered around another unremarkable patch of brown swampland ahead. Though the Warmaster had politely but firmly declined her request to travel to the surface with the warriors of the Speartip, she had been sure there was a glint of mischief in his eye. Taking that for a sign of tacit approval, she had immediately gathered Maggard and her flight crew in the shuttle bay in preparation for descent to the moon below. Her gold-skinned landing skiff launched in the wake of the army dropships, losing itself in the mass of assault craft, heading to the moon's surface. Unable to keep pace with the invasion force, they had been forced to follow the emission trails, and now found themselves circling deep in a soup of impenetrable fog that rendered the ground below virtually invisible.
"Getting some returns from up ahead, my lady," said the first officer. "I think it's the Speartip."
"At last," she said. "Get as close as you can, then set us down. I want to get out of this mist so I can see something worth writing about."
"Yes, ma'am."
Petronella settled back into her seat as the skiff angled its course towards the source of the surveyor return, irritably altering the position of her restraint harness to try to avoid creasing the folds of her dress. She gave up, deciding that the dress was beyond saving, and returned her gaze to the windshield as the pilot gave a sudden yell of terror. Hot fear seethed in her veins as the mist before them cleared, and she saw a huge mechanical giant before them, its proportions massive and armored. Saw-toothed bastions and towers filled her vision, massive cannons and a terrible snarling face of dark iron.
"Throne!"
cried the pilot, hauling on the controls in a desperate evasive maneuver, as roaring fire and light horrifyingly filled the windshield. Petronella's world exploded in pain and broken glass as the guns of the Dies Irae opened fire and blasted her skiff from the yellow skies. Loken surged backwards in horror and disgust as the cadaver attempted to strangle the life from him with its slimy fingers. For something as apparently fragile as a rotted corpse, the thing was possessed of a fearsome strength, and he was dragged to his knees by the weight and power of the creature. With a thought, he flooded his metabolism with battle stims, and fresh strength surged into his limbs. He gripped the arms of his attacker and pulled them from its reeking torso in a flood of dead fluids and a wash of brackish blood. The fire died in the thing's eyes, and it flopped lifeless to the swamp. He pushed himself to his feet and took stock of the situation, his Astartes training suppressing any notion of panic or disorientation. From all around them, the bodies he had previously thought to be lifeless were rising from the dark waters and launching themselves at his warriors. Bolters blasted chunks of moulded flesh from their bodies, or tore limbs from putrefied torsos, but still they kept coming, tearing at the Astartes with diseased yellowed claws. More of the things were rising all around them, and Loken brought three of them down with as many shots, shattering skulls and exploding chests with mass reactive shells.
"Sons of Horus, on me!"
he yelled.
"Form on me!"
The warriors of Tenth Company calmly began falling back to their captain, firing as they went at the necrotic horrors rising from the swamp like creatures from their worst nightmares. Hundreds of dead things surrounded them, mouldering corpses and bloated, muttering abominations, each with a single milky distended eye and a scabrous horn sprouting from its forehead. What were they? Monstrous xeno-creatures with the power to reanimate dead flesh, or something far worse? Thick, buzzing clouds of flies flew round them, and Loken saw an Astartes go down, the feeds on his helmet thick with fat-bodied insects. The warrior frenziedly tore his helmet off, and Loken was horrified to see his flesh rotting away with an unnatural rapidity, his skin greying and peeling away to reveal the liquefying tissue beneath. The bark of bolter fire focused him, and he returned his attention to the battle before him, emptying magazine after magazine into the shambling mass of repulsive creatures before him.
"Headshots only!"
he cried, as he put another of the dead things down, its skull a ruin of blackened bone and sloshing ooze. The tide of the battle began to turn as more and more of the shambling horrors went down and stayed down. The green-fleshed things with grotesquely distended bellies took more killing, though it seemed to Loken that they dissolved into stinking matter as they fell into the water of the swamp. More shapes moved through the mist, as a thunderous roar of heavy cannon fire came from behind them, followed by the bright flare of an explosion high above. Loken looked up to see a golden landing skiff trailing smoke and fire wobble in the sky, though he had not the time to wonder what a civilian craft was doing in a war zone, as yet more of the dead things climbed from the water. Too close for bolters, he drew his sword and brought the monstrously toothed blade to life with a press of the activation stud. A ghastly thing of decomposed flesh and rotten meat hurled itself at him, and he swung his blade two-handed for its skull. The blade roared as it slew, gobbets of wet grey meat spattering his armor as he ripped the sword through from brain pan to groin. He swung at another creature, the green fire of its eyes flickering out as he hacked it in two. All about him, sons of Horus went toe to toe with the terrible creatures that had once been members of the 63rd Expedition. Rotted hands clamped onto his armor from beneath the water, and Loken felt himself being dragged down. He roared and reversed his grip on his sword, stabbing it straight down into leering skulls and rotted faces. But incredibly, their strength was the greater, and he could not resist their pull.
"Garvey!"
shouted Vipers, hacking enemies from his path as he forged through the swamp towards him.
"Luke, help me!"
cried Vipers, grabbing onto Loken's outstretched arm. Loken gripped onto his friend's hand as he felt another set of hands grip him around the chest and haul backwards.
"Let go, you bastards!"
roared Luke Sedere, hauling with all his might. Loken felt himself rising and kicked out as the swamp creatures finally released him. He scrambled back and clambered to his feet. Together, he, Luke, and Nero fought with bludgeoning ferocity, although there was no shape to the battle now, if there ever had been. It was nothing more than butcher work, requiring no swordsmanship or finesse, just brute strength and a determination not to fall. Bizarrely, Loken thought of Lucius, the swordsman of the Emperor's Children Legion, and of how he would have hated this inelegant form of war. Loken returned his attention to the battle, and with Luke Sedere and Nero Vipers in the fight, he was able to gain some space and time to reorganize.
"Thanks, Luke. Nero,
I owe you,
he said in a lull in the fighting. The sons of Horus reloaded bolters and cleaned chunks of dead flesh from their swords. Sporadic bursts of gunfire still sounded from the swamp, and strobing flashes lit the fog with firefly bursts. Off to their left, Loken saw a burning pyre where the skiff had come down, its flames acting as a beacon in the midst of the obscuring fog.
No problem, Garvey, said Sedere.
And Loken knew that he was grinning beneath his helmet.
You'll do the same for me before we're out of this shitstorm, I'll wager.
You're probably right, but let's hope not.
What's the plan, Garvey? Asked Vipers. Loken held up his hand for silence as he attempted to make contact with his Mournevale brothers and the Warmaster once more. Static and desperate cries filled the vox, terrified voices of army soldiers and the damned, gurgling voices that kept saying, Blessed be Nurgleth, over and over. Then a voice cut across every channel, and Loken almost cried aloud in relief to hear it.
All sons of Horus, this is the Warmaster. Converge on this signal. Head for the flames.
At the sound of the Warmaster's voice, fresh energy filled the tired limbs and hearts of the Astartes, and they moved off in good order towards the burning pillar of fire coming from the wrecked skiff they had seen earlier. Loken killed with a methodical precision, each shot felling an opponent. He began to feel that they finally had the measure of this grotesque enemy. Whatever fell energy bestowed animation upon these diseased nightmares was clearly incapable of giving them much more than basic motor functions and an unremitting hostility. Loken's armor was covered in deep gouges, and he wished he knew how many men he had lost to the loathsome hunger of the dead things. He vowed that this Nurgleth would pay dearly for each of their deaths. She could barely breathe, her chest hiking as she drew in convulsive gulps of air from the respirator Maggard was pushing against her face. Petronella's eyes stung, tears of pain coursing down her cheeks as she tried to push herself into a sitting position. All she remembered was a fury of noise and light, a metallic shriek, and a bone-jarring impact as the skiff crashed and broke into pieces. Blood filled her senses, and she felt excruciating pain all down her left side. Flames leapt around her, and her vision blurred with the sting of the atmosphere and smoke.
What happened? She managed,
her voice muffled through the respirator's mouthpiece. Maggard didn't answer, but then she remembered that he couldn't, and twisted her head around to gain a better appreciation of their current situation. Torn-up bodies clothed in her livery littered the ground, the pilots and flight crew of her skiff. And there was a lot of blood covering the wreckage. Even through the respirator, she could smell the gore. Clawing banks of leprous fog surrounded them, though the heat of the flames appeared to be clearing it in their immediate vicinity. Shambling shapes surrounded them, and relief flooded her as she realized that they would soon be rescued. Maggard spun, drawing his sword and pistol, and Petronella tried to shout at him that he must stand down, that these were their rescuers. Then the first shape emerged from the smoke, and she screamed as she saw its diseased flesh and the rotted innards hanging from its opened belly. Nor was it the worst of the approaching things. A cavalcade of cadavers with bloated, ruptured flesh and putrid, diseased bodies sloshed through the mud and wreckage towards them, clawed hands outstretched. The green fire in their eyes spoke of monstrous appetites, and Petronella felt a gut-wrenching terror greater than anything she had ever known. Only Maggard stood between her and the walking, diseased corpses, and he was but one man. She had watched him train in the gymnasia of Kairos many times, but she had never seen him draw his weapons in anger. Maggard's pistol barked, and each shot blasted one of the shambling horrors from its feet, neat holes drilled in its forehead. He fired and fired until his pistol was empty, and then holstered it and drew a long, triangular-bladed dagger. As the horde approached, her bodyguard attacked. He leapt, feet first, at the nearest corpse, and a neck snapped beneath his boot heel. Maggard spun as he landed, his sword decapitating a pair of the monsters, and his dagger ripping the throat from another. His Curlian rapier darted like a silver snake, its glowing edge stabbing and cutting with incredible speed. Whatever it touched dropped instantly to the muddy ground like a servitor with its Dottrina wafer pulled. His body was always in motion, leaping, twisting, and dodging away from the clutching hands of his diseased attackers. There was no pattern to their assault, simply a mindless host of dead things seeking to envelop them. Maggard fought like nothing she had ever seen, his augmetic muscles bulging and flexing as he cut down his foes with quick, lethal strokes. No matter how many he killed, there were always more pressing in, and they steadily forced him back a step at a time. The horde of creatures began to surround them, and Petronella saw that Maggard couldn't possibly hold them all back. He staggered towards her, bleeding from a score of minor wounds. His flesh was blistered and weeping around the cuts, and there was an unhealthy pallor to his skin, despite his respirator gear. She wept bitter tears of horror as the monsters closed in, jaws opening wide to devour her flesh, and grasping hands ready to tear her perfect skin and feast on her innards. This wasn't how it was supposed to be. The Great Crusade wasn't supposed to end in failure and death. A corpse with mouldering, sagging skin lurched past Maggard, his blade lodged in the belly of a giant, necrotic thing with green flesh that was thick with flies. She screamed as it reached for her. Deafening bangs thundered behind her, and the creature disintegrated in an explosion of wet meat and bone. Petronella covered her ears as the thunderous roar of gunfire came again, and her attackers were torn apart in a series of rancid explosions, falling back into the fires of the skiff and burning with stinking green flames. She rolled onto her side, crying in pain and fear as the terrifyingly close volleys continued, clearing a path for the massive, armored warriors of the Sons of Horus. A giant towered above her, reaching for her with his armored gauntlet. He wore no helmet and was silhouetted by a terrible red glow, his awesome bulk haloed by blazing plumes of fire and pillars of black smoke. Even through her tears, the War Master's beauty and physical perfection rendered her speechless. Though blood and dark slime covered his armor, and his cloak was torn and tattered, Horus towered like a war god unleashed, his face a mask of terrifying power. He lifted her to her feet, as easily as one might lift a babe in arms, while his warriors continued the slaughter of the monstrous dead things. More and more Sons of Horus were converging on the crash site, guns firing to drive the enemy back and forming a protective cordon around the War Master.
"Miss Viva," demanded Horus, "what in the name of terror are you doing here? I ordered you to stay aboard the Vengeful Spirit."
She struggled for words, still in awe of his magnificent presence. He had saved her. The War Master had personally saved her, and she wept to know his touch.
"I had to come. I had to see."
"Your curiosity almost got you killed," raged Horus. "If your bodyguard had been less capable, you'd already be dead."
She nodded dumbly, holding on to a twisted spar of metal to keep from collapsing, as the War Master stepped through the debris towards Maggard. The gold-armored warrior held himself erect, despite the pain of his wounds. Horus lifted Maggard's sword arm, examining the warrior's blade.
"What's your name, warrior?" asked the War Master.
Maggard, of course, did not answer, looking over at Petronella for help in answering.
"He cannot answer you, my lord," said Petronella.
"Why not? Doesn't he speak Imperial Gothic?"
"He does not speak at all, sir. House Carpinus' chaperones removed his vocal cords."
"Why would they do that?"
"He is an indentured servant of House Carpinus, and it is not a bodyguard's place to speak in the presence of his mistress."
Horus frowned, as though he did not approve of such things, and said,
"Then you, tell me what his name is."
"He is called Maggard, sir."
"And this blade he wields, how is it that the slightest touch of its edge slays one of these creatures?"
"It is a Curlian blade, forged on ancient Terra, and said to be able to sever the connection between the soul and the body, though I have never seen it used before today."
"Whatever it is, I think it saved your life, Miss Viva."
She nodded as the War Master turned to face Maggard once more, and made the sign of the Aquila before saying,
"You fought with great courage, Maggard.
Be proud of what you did here today. Maggard nodded and dropped to his knees with his head bowed, tears streaming from his eyes at being so honored by the War Master. Horace bent down and placed the palm of his hand on the bodyguard's shoulder, saying, "Rise, Maggard. You have proven yourself to be a warrior, and no warrior of such courage should kneel before me." Maggard stood, smoothly reversing the grip of his sword and offering it, hilt first, to the War Master. The yellow sky reflected coldly in his golden eyes, and Petronella shivered as she saw a newfound devotion in her bodyguard's posture, an expression of faith and pride that frightened her with its intensity. The meaning of the gesture was clear. It said what Maggard himself could not. "I am yours to command." Thus assembled, the Astartes took stock of their situation. All four phalanxes had rendezvoused around the crash site as the attacks from the diseased and dead things ceased for the time being. The spear tip was blunted, but it was still an awesome fighting force, and easily capable of destroying what remained of Temba's paltry detachment. Sedire volunteered his men to secure the perimeters, and Loken simply waved his assent, knowing that Luke was hungry for more battle and for a chance to shine in front of the War Master. Vipers reformed the scouting parties, and Varul and Moy set up fire positions for his devastators. Loken was relieved beyond words to see that all four members of the Mournival had survived the fighting, though Torgadon and Abaddon had both lost their helmets in the furious melees. Aximan's armor had been torn open across his side, and a splash of red, shockingly bright against the green of his armor, stained his thigh.
"Are you all right?"
Torgadon asked him, his armor stained and blistered, as though someone had poured acid over its plates.
"Just about," nodded Loken. "You?"
"Yes, though it was a close-run thing," conceded Torgadon. "Bastard got me underwater and was choking the life out of me. Tore my helmet right off, and I think I must have drunk about a bucket of that swamp water. Had to gut him with my combat knife. Messy."
Torgadon's genhanced body would be unharmed by swallowing the water, no matter what toxins it carried, but it was a stark reminder of the power of these creatures that a warrior as fearsome as him could almost be overcome. Abaddon and Aximand had similar tales of close-run things, and Loken desperately wanted the fight to be over. The longer the mission went on, the more it reminded him of Eidolon's abortive first strike on murder. Restored communications revealed that the Byzant Janizars had suffered terribly under the assault from the swamp, and had hunkered down in defensive positions. Not even the electro-size of their disciplined masters were able to coerce them forward. The horrific enemy had melted back into the fog, but no one could say with any certainty where the creatures had gone. The titans of the Legio Mortis towered over the Astartes, the Dies Irae reassuring the assembled warriors by the simple virtue of its immensity. It was left to Erebus to point the way onwards, he and his depleted warriors staggering into the circle of light surrounding Petronella Vivar's crashed skiff. The first chaplain's armor was stained and battered, its many seals and scripture papers torn from it.
"War Master, I believe we have found the source of the transmissions," reported Erebus. "There is a structure up ahead."
"Where is it, and how close?" demanded the War Master.
"Perhaps another kilometer to the west?"
Horus raised his sword and shouted,
"Sons of Horus, we have been grossly wronged here, and some of our brothers are dead. It is time we avenge them."
His voice easily carried over the dead waters of the swamps, his warriors roaring their assent and following the War Master, as Erebus and the Word-Bearers set off into the mists. Fired with furious energy, the Astartes ploughed through the sodden ground, ready to enact the War Master's wrath upon the vile foe that had unleashed such horrors upon them. Maggard and Petronella went with them, none of the Astartes willing to retreat and escort them back to the army positions. Legion apothecaries tended to their wounds and helped them through the worst of the terrain. Eventually, the mists began to thin, and Loken could make out the more distant figures of Astartes warriors through the smudges of fog. The further they marched, the more solid the ground underfoot became, and as Erebus led them onwards, the mist became thinner still. Then, As quickly as a man might step from one room to another, they were out of it. Behind them, the banks of fog gathered and coiled, like a theatre curtain in a playhouse, waiting to unveil some wondrous marvel. Before them was the source of the Vox transmission, rearing up from the muddy plain like a colossal iron mountain. Eugen Temba's flagship, the Glory of Terror.